to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Well, it's that time of the new year, a time of new beginnings. What better time to talk about birth? There's a rising understanding that babies are souls who come to occupy a body for their journey through life. And when you combine that with the principle that the way something starts off, it tends to continue, we begin to understand how very, very important it is that we help all babies start their lives off in loving, supportive, and safe ways. If a soul is a radiant being, then the likelihood is great that we want to welcome that soul radiantly. And that's the topic for today's show. I'm talking with Diane Speier today about radiant birthing. Welcome to Full Power Living. We're making your life easier by helping you understand the power and importance of human emotions. And we have a wide variety of guests and topics because emotions are part of everything. They're the language of the universe. And we broadcast over Blog Talk Radio, EmotionalPro.com, and we distribute through iTunes. And if you have questions for our guest, our toll-free number is 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. Well, Diane Speier, PhD, views her true purpose as welcoming incoming spirits by inspiring the parents to give birth like a gentle embrace that nourishes the development of a new generation of peacemakers. I love that. Before she immigrated to the United Kingdom in 1998, Dr. Speier founded and directed the Family Tree Center for Parents in New York, where they offered classes and groups and workshops and individual counseling to prospective new parents. And since 1978, she's been a certified childbirth educator. She gives birth preparation courses and fitness for pregnant and postnatal women. She also started attending births as a labor companion, which is a doula, in 1978. And in 2013, in collaboration with her daughter, they released a postnatal app called Digital Doula, and that's available through iTunes. Digital Doula, the first of its kind, a rare information resource for postnatal women and their families. She's also an academic health researcher. She's worked on a number of NHS-funded projects. She has a BA in psychology and a master's in applied psychology with a specialty in the psychology of parenthood. And in addition to her general practice as a hypnotherapist and psychotherapist, she functions as a perinatal psychologist, specializing in the psychophysiology of birth. And she's a life ritual celebrant, a mother of four children, and a grandmother of four also. Whew. Dr. Diane Speier, welcome to Full Power Living. You've been busy, girl.
Yes. Thanks, Eileen. It's good to be here. It's a long list of things, isn't it?
It is.
Actually,
yeah.
there's been a fifth grandchild born in the last year.
Oh, I've got to change that. Good, good, mm-hmm. good. That's great. That's how many I have, too. You and I talked a little as we were preparing for this show, and you told me that when you first went to England, you found pregnant mothers ready to give birth, feeling pretty good about the process. And in the 17 years since you've been there, things have changed, that a lot of mothers now are really fearful. Tell me about this phenomenon, what you've observed and what you think's going on.
Well, it's important to understand that there could be a cultural issue about that, in that the way that women prepare for birth might be a little bit different here in the UK than it was in the United States. At the same time, though, when I kind of became an academic health researcher and didn't work in this area for a number of years. So when I came back, I began to read and observe and listen to what women were saying. And I get a sense that what's happened in the United States, and could be also true for the United Kingdom, is that the issue around risk management became so much more the profound effect on how women were giving birth, that fear became a major manifestation of that. And so women being told everything that might go wrong in the process of being pregnant, sometimes take that on board. And the natural remedy for that is to get educated. And I think maybe that's my background, you know, as a childbirth educator. I think that knowledge is power. And when women know what to expect and what they can do about it, then they go into the experience of birth more empowered, more able to take on or to challenge some of the things that might be suggested to them. So they can be more engaged and embodied in the experience of giving birth. So what I saw, what I felt, was that the changes had kind of moved away from, you know, women preparing for birth and going through the process. One of the things I noted was that before I came to the UK, the incidence of vaginal birth after cesarean was at its height. And in within about 3 years of that, there was a change in the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology to reduce the number of VBACs, that's the vaginal birth after cesarean, and that the number of women who were refused even the option of having a vaginal birth after cesarean, especially in the United States, is really a deterrent. So, unfortunately, the fact that the United States has a 33% cesarean section rate has a lot to do with the fact that women aren't being given the option to try to give birth vaginally after they've had a cesarean. So all of these things kind of factor into that.
I remember when I first contemplated getting pregnant, I realized that I was fearful of giving birth, largely because I was fear-based, but also because my mother-in-law said that was giving birth to her son, my husband, was the day she lost. And my grandmother talked about suffering death to give birth. And I had to ally with the idea that once a baby got inside, it had to come out, so I would have to go through birth. You know? That helped me.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you speak about fear, it's important to understand that one of the byproducts of being fearful in approaching birth is that fear creates tension, tension creates pain, and exacerbates that pain. So one way of making the experience more manageable is to reduce the fear by providing information in addition to that relaxation, so that when a woman is having contractions in labor, rather than tensing up around them, she can, you know, she's learned and practiced the ability to relax into it. And that's, I think, the reason why this area of hypnobirthing is so effective and popular these days, because it teaches women how to relax very deeply. And if you can relax very deeply, the fear goes away, the tension goes away, and it's not to say that it's not painful, but it's manageable.
So that brings me to think a bit about the mind-body, emotion-body connection. I know when I gave birth to my first child, I wasn't good at listening to my subconscious, part of me that believed that my husband didn't really want her. And I did talk with him the day before I finally gave birth, and I was 3 weeks overdue, by the way. But then in the birth process, my cervix dilated to 8+ centimeters and held for an hour, which was not good for the baby. Mm-hmm. And later, I realized it was because I didn't trust that he really wanted her. And in fact, when she was 10 months old, he left our family saying he wasn't ready to be a father.
Now, that's an excellent example of following your intuition. And a lot about birth is intuitive. But in order to get to that place of trusting your intuition, you have to let go of a lot of the things that were learned over the course of life, and in particular over the course of the pregnancy. The mind can get in the way when we talk about mind-body integration. And that's really, you know, birth is probably the quintessential mind-body experience. I sometimes call it psychophysiology of birth, in that the mind needs to be quieted for birth. In fact, we need to get out of the cerebral part of the brain and move into the part of the brain that regulates these things that we don't really have a lot of control over. If we have too much thinking, if we're overthinking the process, that's going to get in the way, because your mind can imagine all kinds of things could go wrong, what could happen, whether if this feels like this now, what's it going to feel like in an hour? All of those kinds of things, you know, all those kinds of things really can interfere with the process. And there's a very dynamic way in which the hormones of the brain, particularly from the pituitary gland, all of those hormones that are really circulating in abundance during the process of birth, when we get fearful, we end up producing too much adrenaline, and that whole stress response can interfere with the process of birth because it's an antagonist for the primary hormone called oxytocin. So oxytocin is called the love hormone, and it is flowing in abundance, or you want it to be flowing in abundance during birth. And so when that happens, things just move along the way they are supposed to. But if you get tense and fearful and you get upset and there's adrenaline there, it like short circuits the opportunity for oxytocin to do the job that it needs to do. So you don't want to be overthinking the process of birth. You want to actually put the cerebral brain on sleep and let the body do what it needs to do.
Right.
So there's nothing cerebral about giving birth.
Yeah, it's a total practice in being totally in the here and now. I was remembering as you were talking that my older sister, when she gave birth, she later told me it was scary to her, but she realized that it was something like driving a big garbage truck that was totally out of control, and that there was no chance that she would ever be able to get it in control, so she just decided to enjoy the ride. I thought that was
That is the way to go. Yeah. For sure.
So when I gave birth the first time, which was in 1970, there wasn't all this information available. There were some classes. I took Lamaze classes. But my baby was born in a military hospital, and the doctors there said, we don't care how you have birth as long as we don't have to teach it to you or know anything about it, you know. And so my husband and I did it together. And I note that when you're talking about preparing for birth, you're talking about both parents. In fact, you have a birth empowerment workshop. Tell us about the involvement of both parents.
Well, I think that it's really important to understand that the birth of the first child can be completely disruptive to the dynamic of the couple. And people really need to be aware of that ahead of time, I guess, because if you can then strengthen the bond between these two people who are in a couple, then together they can go on to parent this child and become a real family unit. So as a teacher for so many years, one of the things that I noticed was that in teaching birth preparation, there really wasn't time to get into some of the emotional and spiritual parts about having a baby. What does it mean when this new being arrives here on the earth plane? And the creation of the Birth Empowerment Workshop was an opportunity to explore that in more depth. And then, and as the workshop was going on, because it was really started about a little more than 25 years ago, the essence of developing a greater and deeper sense of intimacy between the mother and the father made it seem like it was more of a couple's retreat. And so the dynamic of the workshop is for them to be working together so that they're on the same page, because I think there are some really profound statistics, like 92% of couples experience much more marital dissatisfaction after the first baby is born, and it increased conflict between them as a couple. So I really felt it was important for them to understand the relationship needs that they have so that they don't start going in different directions. Because the mother may be very absorbed in her mothering, in breastfeeding. Sometimes the father feels left out by that experience. But that doesn't mean that he can't have an intimate bond with his child, because he can be doing all kinds of other activities. Even if they were to take a nap with the baby, you know, heart to heart, that's a really great way for fathers to create an intimate bond with their child. So this way they're not moving in opposite directions. they're kind of moving in the same direction together, and I think that's what the basis of that workshop is all about. And anybody who might be interested in sponsoring this workshop in their neck of the woods should just give me, you know, get in touch with me, and we can talk about that. But the essence of it was to really also to prepare for birth together, to understand what's happening. And so there are a variety of exercises that we get engaged in that really allow them to explore their own emotional tones, to connect with the baby before it's born, various guided visualizations and guided imagery that I use, really help them connect and to communicate prenatally. It's an exciting thing to do. So the main thing is that it's a couple's retreat, but it's also about celebrating the emotional and the spiritual dimensions, really, because it's a whole multidimensional. As your opening statement said, birth is a multidimensional event, and it needs to be celebrated as such.
You know, I mentioned to you when we talked before the show that my second husband took a 3-month midwifery course, and he also suggested we have a home birth, which we did, although we had a more experienced midwife present as well as my husband, who was able to catch our son. But he used to tell me that his perception was that it was much easier for me to connect to our son because he had been part of my body. And that from my husband's perspective, he had to go to the effort of making his own connection with my son, which involved him studying him and getting to know him, becoming intimate by getting to know them rather than having that intimacy like a mother has of this is my baby, this is my flesh, you know, we're one.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that very interesting. And he used to, from the time our son was very small, he would undress him and lie him on the bed, and he would talk to him about how the body moves, and he would blow air up and down his spine and across his shoulders and his pelvis and tell him these are the areas of his body that he has to coordinate in order to move in the world and so forth. And he used to work with him on walking, doing different steps of walking and so forth. And it was a tremendous connection that he ended up having, you know, which was really great. But it took a lot of work from him.
Uh-huh, yes. Well, over the years, I had worked with, I did a postnatal fitness class, really, for mothers and babies for 20 years. And part of what, you know, women really wanted to get back into shape. That was great. But they also wanted to have meaningful ways in which they could play with their babies. And so I taught them a series of simple infant exercises that allows the baby to prepare for motor skill development. And over the years, women have just said it's a wonderful thing, a wonderful way of communicating with their babies as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that the babies would love, because they're not able to do the movement on their own, they would just love going through the set of exercises. Maybe it took 5 minutes. But that,
right.
You know, when they needed something to do, there was something they could do with their babies, even outside the classroom. So I totally agree. When we really tune in to the babies and their development, it can really make a positive difference.
All right. Well, we're up to our first break. Thank you for those comments. I'm talking today with perinatal psychologist, doula, and birth empowerment expert, Dr. Diane Spire, about radiant birthing. And what do you or the people you love who might be having babies need to know in order to welcome new citizens to the earth through peaceful birth? We're going to find out when we return here on Full Power Living. We'll be right back. Parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. In this early part of 2015, we are focusing on healing and new beginnings. Last week, Mary O'Malley talked with me about how to heal your heart. Be sure to listen to that because it's on our website at emotionalpro.com, actually both of them. And on our next show, Jana Arner, who's a certified universal intelligence mentor, will help you with your own new beginnings as she answers the important questions you want to ask about your life. You can meet and consult with your higher self as Jana helps you to get the answers you need from your own higher self. That's next Thursday, January 15th at 9 a.m. Pacific. Call in early to ask Jana the questions that you have about your relationships, work, personal challenges, children, teens, finances, or even birthing, although today would be more appropriate for that. So if you can't be with me on the live show, you can email your questions to me at Eileen@emotionalpro.com. That's Eileen@emotionalpro.com. So we have UK residents, doula, psychologist, birthing expert, and parenting consultant Diane Speier as guesting today, and we're talking about radiant birthing. What does it take to welcome children into this world so that they start their lives feeling welcomed for their whole life and feeling peaceful? So, Diane, talk to me a little bit about this notion you have that peaceful births can create a more peaceful world.
Oh, yes. Well, I think sometimes I refer to that as is the baby having a soft landing when they arrive. And when they have a soft landing, they're much more open. They're much more responsive. And, you know, the babies are born into what's called the quiet alert state of awareness, and they're able to absorb from their environment right from the start. But when babies come in and they're traumatized because it's been difficult, the birth has gone on, maybe there was a little fetal distress along the way, that's a hard landing, and that's a hard way to get started in life. And it tends to cause the baby to sort of kind of shut down a little bit and just not be able to receive what's going on around the baby from the environment, whether it's a boy or a girl, it doesn't matter. And so when babies have a kind of soft landing and they are received with joy and the mother is very, you know, she hasn't been drugged and therefore is really experiencing the ecstatic moment that birth often is, that's a wonderful combination of factors to starting off family life. What's interesting about the hormonal part of that is that the mother is experiencing these endorphins that put her into this kind of state of joy, maybe sometimes euphoria. Babies are born with their own level of hormones so that they're ready to meet their mother, so that, you know, when the mother is primed to meet her baby and the baby is primed to meet her back, this is the perfect set of circumstances to really start this bonding process. And that's I'm invested in that. I'm really wanting to have that kind of peaceful beginning, because babies that start off that way and continue to be nourished in a similar kind of environment with both parents, not just the mother, but the father as well, there's like a little nest that's created for them, and they bloom and they blossom, and they are receptive to the world and the environment around them. And that if there are enough babies born that way, then their attitude toward life is much more peaceful and loving and empathetic and compassionate. And those are the qualities that make for peacemakers. So that's how I'd like to see the world, maybe. Start with a small corner, but, you know, if we can continue to grow those kinds of attributes,
right,
then we can get a generation of people out there who have a very different orientation towards life.
Yes. I like working on that, too. Now, you and I met in person in Ireland in September when we both presented at the Parenting 2.0 conference on life skills. So you know this story, but bear with me. I'll tell it just a little bit, that I normally do the job on four or five babies that I've been privileged to be present for. I do the job of what I call orienting them when they're born. When they're lying in their little bassinets, I tell them, this is this is the kind of landing you had. This is where you are. These are the major players in your life. This is who I am, and welcome. And here's what your body's like, and what you need to do now. I do those kind of orientation. And I had the privilege of being invited in for the full birth experience of both of my grandchildren that my son and his wife Anne had. And the second one had a very hard landing because her mother's pelvis had been broken and she wasn't coming out straight. And so she had to be resuscitated. She came out blue and floppy and not in good shape. And so you may remember the story where after her parents had greeted her, I went in and started talking to her, and I had learned about people holding on to emotions from the earliest time of life. And I thought that if I were in her place, I would not feel safe. So I talked to her for a while. She was all hooked up to a big dashboard that a nurse was monitoring so that they could find out what her oxygen saturation level was and her breathing rate, heart rate, and all of that. And I told her that I thought it was a very rough landing and that she was safe now and she wouldn't have to go through it again. And I was sorry she had that, and that all she needed to do now was to come into her body and occupy it fully. As I did that, the nurse looked up and said, whatever you're doing over there, keep it up, because everything just went to normal. And so, you know, the point I want to make in sharing that story is that even if a baby has a hard landing, and I totally agree with you in that concept, you can help by being sensitive to empathetic to the baby's experience, to that person's experience. Is that correct? Would
absolutely.
You agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree with that. In that, what you're calling sensitivity is understanding that this is a new little being in a very small, uncoordinated body, and that they have great awareness in terms of they're picking up information throughout the pregnancy, well, especially in the second half of the pregnancy. They can hear what's going on outside. They have some awareness of light. So their senses are developing very quickly, and so they are aware beings even right after birth. And if they've been wounded by the experience and hurt by the experience, that kind of sensitivity can just calm them down. It's recognizing them as the spirit that's entered the body. And that spirit is completely aware of what's going on around it and what's just happened to it. So by calming that down, you're actually calming down the whole system of the stress response, then, of course, things are going to go back to nature. So by just letting that baby know you understand can make so much difference. And I think more and more parents, you know, need to give themselves permission to do that, to not feel foolish or silly doing that, but just saying, you know, I understand this has been a difficult, they won't always have Eileen Dillon around to help them out. So if they can just, you know, just talk directly to that baby and say, I understand what happened. This was difficult for you. It was difficult for me. But we just can love each other here. And, you're going to be safe, we're going to take care of you. Those are the kinds of things that that baby needs to hear if it has been a rough landing, as you described.
Mm-hmm. Especially, yeah. Some of the medical personnel looked askance at me when I was orienting my oldest granddaughter, and my son just looked up at them and smiled and said, "Oh, it's my mother. She talks to babies."
Mm-hmm.
And which is helpful. So to allow ourselves to talk to babies, even as I was preparing for the Parenting 2.0 conference, I got a little flyback from some people about talking about babies as souls, that a lot of people don't like to think or have the idea that it's a soul that's coming into a physical body. But I can't figure any other way to understand.
Well, I have to agree with you. I think we aren't human beings having a spiritual experience. We're really spiritual beings having a human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the earth plane is a great place to learn the lessons that we need to evolve. So over the years, you know, it's so natural to me that it's surprising when I come, you know, when I bump up with people who don't understand that or maybe don't even accept that. But it is. You know, there's a wonderful woman who's a physician who started, one of the founders of the American Holistic Medical Association is Gladys McGarry.
Oh, yes.
Who came from the Association for Research, the ARE, Research and Enlightenment, I guess it is. And
right.
It was part of the Edgar Cayce organization that I believe it's in Virginia Beach.
Yes.
And she wrote a book called Born to Live, and she presents that idea, and this is probably, I'm thinking more than 30 years old, her book, about, you know, the babies are actually, the soul of that baby is very intimately involved in the development of the physical form, that it lays out a kind of a blueprint for how that baby is going to develop. What are the influences in terms of, you know, one baby might have this particular susceptibility and another baby might have a different thing. So I think and feel really more that there is, and it's important to allow the possibility that, yes, these are souls that are taking human expression in the form of a physical body, and they will come and learn specific lessons for the lifetime. And if we can bring babies in softly and we can give them a good start, they can become their whole selves a lot sooner.
I'm glad you mentioned Gladys. My friend Carolee Shamus, who's been on this program, wrote a book about the women mentors in her life that have made a difference. I'm happy to inform you that Gladys McGarry and I are two of the people who are featured in that book. And she's, so I'm grabbing it as you were talking. The title she's given is Living Holistic Medicine. So. Yeah, she's an amazing woman who grew up in India, or was born in India. Yeah. So, you know, when I was giving birth back in the 70s, I never heard of anything called a doula. Where did doulas come from? Can you educate me here?
Well, the doula is actually, it's a Greek word, and it stands for, some people will say servant, some people say slave, depending on how literally you want to take the definition of it. And it's someone who mothers the mother. And so a lot of the time a person will be a birth doula, and she will be taking care and looking after a mother while she's having the baby during the birth itself. And in other times there are postpartum doulas, and that's someone who goes into the home and helps with the adjustment that takes place to smooth the transition into parenthood, to be taking care of all of the, you know, the ordinary day-to-day kinds of things that have to happen so the mother can be focused on getting to know her baby, to getting into the rhythm of her feeding, you know, hopefully it's breastfeeding, but, you know, whatever that is, so that this bond is allowed, is cherished. And so the doula goes about in the home doing a little bit of laundry, maybe a little cleaning up, maybe shopping if they're older kids, maybe picking them up after school, things like that. So The doula is really primarily someone who mothers the mother in either one of those capacities.
I feel sad there weren't doulas around when I was giving birth.
Well, you know what, Lena, doulas sometimes come in the form of a mother. If you've got a good, positive relationship with your mother, then that's the best mm-hmm. person to be around. But that's not true mm-hmm. for a lot of women. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have that kind of nourishing relationship with your mother, then another person stepping in becomes like a mother surrogate in that capacity to take care of the woman so that she can be forming the bonds in the relationship, including the partner or the father, who's ever there with her and the baby. That should be the focus of attention at all times. And so, you know, sometimes it's cooking, you know, bringing them meals, shopping. That's what helps a mother. And I think one of the best things that people can do when they're going to visit a brand new mother is to bring food. That all
yes.
they have to do, all they have to do is heat it up. Because, and I, you know, I often say to clients, you know, if somebody's coming to visit, they can visit so long as they're bringing food.
Right,
because
nourishing food.
Because it's very tiring for a mother to have to deal with visitors, even though it's exciting. It's very tiring. So at least she'll be well fed when it's
mm-hmm.
finished. So
I totally agree with you. Now, I was looking at some statistics with the World Health Organization, and we may have to split this conversation in two here because of our next break, but they report that nearly 3 million babies die, usually within the first week after birth worldwide every year. And most of those births occur in underdeveloped countries where they don't have good prenatal care or reliable birthing arrangements. And mm-hmm. I remember telling you that our daughter has been heading up a project in the jungles of Ecuador, where the indigenous families asked people from the states to come and help them learn how to give birth safely. Their practice there was for a mother to go off into the jungle by herself and give birth, and they had a really high rate of infant and mother mortality. And so with your work that you do on radiant birthing, that's a benefit, is that people who are working in that way are having less of a chance of things going wrong and more of a chance of things going right. Correct?
Absolutely. Yes. Most definitely. And, I mean, sometimes over the years what's happened is there will be certain aspects, some medicalized aspects of the American obstetric system that gets exported, and it doesn't necessarily work out because you're coming into a completely different culture that doesn't necessarily have, you know, the clinics available within a distance that they can reach, or they may not have transportation to get to the clinics where that is. So if sometimes the obstetric model, which is highly medicalized, doesn't necessarily fit in to a country where, or, you know, culture where they haven't industrialized, they don't have those kinds of resources in effect. And I think that the program that you mentioned is wonderful in that it's exporting the right elements about how to give birth powerfully, positively, mm-hmm. you know, providing resources that are appropriate to the country and the culture in which the women mm-hmm. are giving birth. And that's really the key to really improving some of the mortality rates, whether it's maternal mortality or even neonatal mortality, newborns
right.
who are dying because there aren't the resources, or the mother is unable to feed the baby, or, you know, formula companies have intruded into the space, and so women are making different choices about feeding their babies that are not, you know, if you have to create formula and there isn't good water to make it with, you know, those mm-hmm. are some of the things that make for difficult, dangerous
yes.
situations for babies in terms of how they're being fed. So you want to export the things that are natural, the things that the body can do, the wisdom, and usually it's from the midwifery model that happens, you know, so that the midwives can then share that, and there's a emphasis on normality rather than pathology.
Yes, I totally agree. And they did bring in nurse practitioners and midwives to teach those courses. And their focus, of course, is on empowering the people, the indigenous people themselves. They taught a couple of villages mini birthing classes until they got it. And now those people are out teaching other indigenous people. They're not, you know, it's not us doing it to them. It's time for our second break. And Diane, I want to talk a little bit more about breastfeeding when we come back. We'll be right back.
Okay.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them. Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. We're back talking today with Diane Speier, PhD, about radiant birthing. Dr. Speier works with parents through the birth process to facilitate the best possible birth, growth, and healing. And remember that her website is dianespire.com. That's dianespier.com. So, Diane, before we took our break, I have another sister who's a nurse who's a lactation specialist, and I'm very interested. I mean, I breastfed both of my babies, and to me, it's the only way to go. I can't imagine putting my baby on a bottle because there's so many benefits to breastfeeding, and yet there are a lot of people who, you know, if you have to go back to work or whatever, it's a lot more convenient to just get formula. Talk to me a little bit about your ideas about breastfeeding.
Well, I'm a really strong advocate for breastfeeding, and just this week I posted a blog called Seeds of Intimacy because I think breastfeeding is really the first lesson in intimacy, where mother, you know, where the child is held close to the body, there's skin-to-skin contact, there's nourishment and nurturing and empathy, and all of those things sort of come together in that. And I've had an interesting response. You know, there are those people who are, you know, singing from the same hymn sheet, and they say, yes, it's great, I'm such a good article. And then there were some people who didn't breastfeed, who really raised, and even some who have breastfed, raised the issue of, you know, making it seem like babies who are bottle-fed are doomed, and that's not my point and wasn't my point in the blog, but just to, for people to understand that we actually lay those seeds of intimacy when we're connecting with our babies during the breastfeeding process. So if you can make it happen, that's, you know, that's wonderful. At the same time, there are lots of ways for bottle feeding mothers to become intimate with their children, so it's not that, you know, nothing can happen there, but there are so many benefits of breastfeeding, and in the last year or so, there's been a lot of reporting in the news about the microbiome, and the way that is, it's the flora of our body, the bacteria, the friendly bacteria in our gut, And the babies who are born vaginally and then are nurtured at the breast during breastfeeding are developing healthy forms of bacteria for their bodies to grow. And this microbiome is really being understood. The human microbiome is really being understood as part of what makes us healthy. And when we miss out on that experience, we're just not as solidly grounded in the body in terms of our development. So that's just one recent context for the importance of breastfeeding. But also it also offers the mother the hormonal aspects. One of the things that oxytocin does, remember we talked about that during birth, and now it's also part of the breastfeeding experience, is it allows the mother to relax. It has that kind of effect on the body. And the baby is getting oxytocin too, so the baby relaxes during that time. And I always think that, I'm not criticizing bottle feeding. I'm just saying you don't get that when you're having a bottle feeding experience. It's an organic reality of breastfeeding that there are hormonal benefits. Then there's, so many different benefits for the mother, so many benefits for the baby. I mean, it helps the uterus to contract down to its normal size.
Right.
It has a number of various things that just help to allow the mother to embrace this new experience, because her whole identity has been transformed by the birth of this child. And that's very stressful for a lot of people. So to be able to have an inborn ability to tamp down some of that stress just by breastfeeding is a wonderful thing. And yet at the same time, a lot of people are feeling a huge pressure to do that. And, I think sometimes there are things that get in the way of women having a positive breastfeeding experience. Again, some of it can be overthinking. But emotions do really get in the way. And again, if they're strong emotions of fear or sadness or even anger, can interfere with the flow of oxytocin, and oxytocin is what brings the milk out to the baby. So there are so many different. In fact, in the app that I created, the postnatal app called Digital Doula, which can be found on iTunes, there's a whole chapter on breastfeeding, and it really gets into the whole lots and lots of information about breastfeeding, some of the history of breastfeeding, but as well as some of the benefits. What kinds of things can help you have a positive experience, whether it's positioning the baby, whether it's, integrating that into your life. There's a wealth of knowledge and also lots of resources in the Hot Topics section just about feeding babies from the breast.
Oh, that's really wonderful. So I mentioned a little earlier that I was allowed into the birthing experience with my son and daughter-in-law, for which I will sing their praises for the rest of my life. I really enjoyed that, felt very special to be able to do that. But it brings me to the question of, you work with couples who are having babies. Do you ever work with grandparents? Is there a place for grandparents?
Yes. But it needs to be something in which there's a comfort level, that there's a good, open, understanding relationship between the generations. And I definitely, it's funny that you asked that question, because just recently I've been thinking about the benefits of maybe teaching grandparents. I recently did some coaching with a mother, a grandmother actually, whose daughter was having her first child, and she was asked to be there present like a doula. And, could I give her any good advice, And, maybe we spoke for an hour and a half or something like that. And I gave her lots of good ideas that can help her to be present but unobtrusive, and, certainly allowing the mother who's giving birth. She's the star, the producer, and the director of this production, and everybody else is supporting cast. And mothers and grandmothers, need to be there in that capacity. But if a grandmother brings anxiety into the situation, that mother who's giving birth is going to pick up on that anxiety. That's what causes the adrenaline that interferes with oxytocin flow. So you don't want to get into that. So the benefits of my working with this grandmother was that she could be fully present with great ideas of things to do that would help her daughter, but also include the father, because sometimes fathers feel a little nervous that they're going to be superseded by the presence of another person. And that's not, you know, when you have a doula there or a grandmother there, that adds support to the father. So he doesn't have to have the responsibility of remembering everything and doing everything right, but he could just be present, providing the kind of emotional support that she needs while she's giving birth. And that gives her strength. So grandmothers, I think, are very important. And I think that may be the direction I'm going to, you know, and it's not every grandparent gets involved, you know, gets invited. Mm-hmm. Or even wants to be involved. But for those who do, then it's an interesting story. When I was giving birth to my daughter, I wanted to have a home birth, but I got to the pushing stage and got stuck. Mm-hmm. So I had to go to the hospital. I was a hospital transfer for the delivery of my daughter. And my mother was present at the birth. She'd never seen any of her children being born. So when I decided to have a home birth, she thought this was a great opportunity. But I have a friend who is actually an obstetrician who swears that it was my mother's presence in the house that made it difficult for me to give birth at home. So I had to go to the hospital. And my fourth birth was actually born at home, and I didn't invite my mother that time. So if mothers bring anxiety into the situation, into the space, wherever that space is, then the mother's going to pick up on that because anxiety is very contagious in the birthplace. So you want to keep it away. So teaching grandparents would be a wonderful way to increase the support for a mother that's really, you know, mother-centered.
You know, I'll just mention that one of the most difficult things for me, and I think it would probably hold true for almost anybody in that situation, is that I had had my own birthing experiences, and I knew what worked for me. And when my daughter-in-law finally was pushing, and nothing was happening, and nobody was doing anything about it, I did finally take my son aside. This was his second child. And I just said, she's working too hard. Get the doctor in here to do something for her. And he did hear me on that, and they did move her along. So, Diane, if there were three really brief things that you want people to remember about radiant birthing, about the birthing process, what would those be?
Get educated, because knowledge really helps you to understand what's going to happen and what you can do about it. Birth can be empowering, and the way that you can become empowered is by having that knowledge and support. So support is very important, wherever it comes from. It needs to be support that's really aligned with the mother who's giving birth. And by the way, in response to what you said, there are differences between generations. There are differences from child to child. So one mother, four children, every birth was different. So empowerment comes when you combine knowledge with support. And whether that support is just your partner and or the father or a doula, that support makes all the difference in the world, and it brings down cesarean section rates. It brings down the need for medication. There are so many benefits to having that extra support. And understand that the baby that's being born is a very sentient human being. And even though it can't speak, it doesn't have, you know, skills and abilities and, you know, any coordination really, it has awareness. It understands. And as a perinatal psychologist, I found that it's important for parents to understand it's not a blank slate. It comes in with a lot of awareness and a lot of understanding that it's eventually it will grow into that. And now there are more and more babies these days young children that are actually remembering birth. They're remembering their experiences before they were born, and they're sharing them with their parents. So understand that babies that are coming in, give them the respect and the dignity and the love that they deserve.
That's beautiful. Thank you. I couldn't agree with you more. So let me remind people that your phone numbers in the UK are on our chat sites at Blog Talk Radio and EmotionalPro.com, and you'll be able to see them even when we go off the air. Your website is DianeSpeier.com, DianeSpeier. That's on the chats also. So, you know, I started out talking about the principle, the spiritual principle, that the way something starts out, it tends to become. And I just want to appreciate you, Diane, for really putting this practice into your life and into your work. You help so many new citizens of our earth to start out in a warm, spiritual, safe, and welcoming way. And it's an amazing thing to do, but also it's a wonderful gift to all of us. So I want to thank you for the work you've been doing, Lo, these many years, and also thank you for being here with me today on Full Power Living.
It's been a pleasure, Eileen, and it's just a passion that just never goes. Even as I become the grandmother and grow older, I still feel passionately about getting babies off to a good start and welcoming these incoming spirits.
I totally agree with you. Thank you so much for bringing that message. So, my loyal listeners, be sure to be with us next week as our Accessing Universal Intelligence mentor, Jana Arner, helps you access the precise information that will help you, that you may need, and she gets it from the highest and best part of yourself, which we call the higher self. So call in early to our toll-free number, and I want you to know that people who have called in the past have been able to make profound changes in their lives as a result of what they've learned just in asking a single question, so don't miss it. Send me your question at Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, at EmotionalPro.com if you can't be there in person, and I'll ask it on your behalf. And that's next Thursday, January 15th, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern. I look forward to having you with me on that show. Paul Johnston, Fresh Talk Media, thank you for being our producer today. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.